Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMel with you with the positive mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. With the saga of Bernie Madoff, AIG bonuses, Goldman Sachs, and a host of other repugnant behaviors, it reveals a terrible dysfunction in our culture, which has now come to our screeching attention. We are a society that is addicted and ultimately maddened by our obsession with abundance, extravagance, and getting more. Well, how did we become that way? What's that all about? Greed. Is it about greed? Is it about being at the top of the hill? Is it about accomplishments so you could relax? Is it about safety? That's what we're going to look at today. Greed. And we want to look at your greed. Have you ever felt greedy? You want more. You got to have more. You can't have enough. Did you ever look when you're shopping and say, I got to get more of these. I got to get that. I have to get it. Do you have that feeling inside you? Did you ever make love and feel like you got to keep making love? Did you ever want somebody and then want somebody else or more of the same? Have you ever been insatiable? Now that's a real question. Because greed and insatiability seem to go together. Because if you were satiable, greed would stop at some point. You'd say, I've eaten enough. I'm sated. Right? Insatiability. Greed. Interesting combination of the two words. Now, greed usually denotes the excessive urge to possess as a goal bringing satisfaction in itself. The desire to acquire material wealth and possessions beyond the need of the individual, especially when the accumulation of possessions denies somebody else their legitimate needs or access to those resources. Like if you're betting in the stock market and you're making money hand over fist. For everybody who wins in the stock market, you know, somebody loses. I know you don't realize this, but that's what happens. When you buy a stock, somebody sells you the stock. And if the stock goes up, the person who sold you the stock has lost money because if they had held it, it would have gone higher. So it's a very interesting thing, the stock market. It's all about people making decisions. It's an exchange. They call it the stock exchange. I give you my stock, you give me money now. Because I think if I give you my stock now, the price may go down. Whereas if you buy it, you think the stock will go up. So there's some part of you that's anticipating, I'm going to do better than this. But somebody always loses for somebody who wins. Well, what's wrong with that? You enter a marathon, right? You're going to run around the city. Somebody wins, 100 others lose. Should we be protecting our brothers against losing? Is that our role in life, that nobody should ever lose? Well, then nobody could ever win. So it can't be about winning and losing. But sometimes greed is at the cost of others, i.e. Goldman Sachs' mortgages. Selling the mortgages, shorting the mortgage market, and then driving the market downward, which they had the power to do. Not only shorting the market, but putting weight on the market so that the market structure would be such so that it would go lower. I remember once when I worked in Wall Street, I handled the account of a company whose purpose it was to, they went short a thing called G.D. Searle. And G.D. Searle was the maker of the birth control pill. And then they released information negative about the birth control pill. They made money by shorting the birth control pill. Shorting is when you sell something that you actually don't own yet. But you sell it in anticipation of buying it back later. So that's what's going on in the market. It's a much more complicated story to tell you about it. But it's an idea of, you know, I know how to make money on your disaster. Somebody explained the Goldman Sachs deal like they were selling you a car. Right? Here's the way they did it. They were selling you a car that they knew had faulty brake linings. And then another company of theirs was buying insurance policies on your life. See, they figured, I'll send you a bad car. The car's going to crash. You're going to die, and I'll cash in on the insurance policy. That's, in effect, the way Goldman made their money. Is that greed? Or is that just good thinking? Is that hedging your bet? Amassing a large collection of coins, a coin collection, would not be considered greed. But if you've ever been a coin collector, you know that feeling of, I've got to have that 1932D. I've got to get that Liberty Quarter. I have to have that thing. I got to fill in my collection. And the feeling of when you have almost all the coins filled in your coin book, you go and you finally get that one coin, whether you buy it or find it, and you fill in your book and you look at it and you go, wow. Well, the trouble with that is, greed never ends. It doesn't end with satisfaction. You see, greed is the desire to achieve, but not the accomplishment of the achievable. That's why people never have enough. That's why if you're hungry for, if you're a sex addict, for example, another form of greed, you have to go find somebody to have sex with. And then as soon as you have sex with that person, you're up looking to find sex with somebody else. They talk about the need for change. The need for change is greed. The need to have something different is greed, because you're not being satisfied with what you have. People who are greedy are always looking for something different, because they have to stimulate themselves, because they can't be satisfied with what they have. That's not everybody. But almost every one of us have had the experience. What about your experience? I'd like you to call in later, and I'd like you to tell me about your experience of your own greed. It could be greed for food. It could be greed for all the natural things in life. It could be greed for, you know, being out in nature. Now, the question is, it's a feeling. You can't be satisfied. You must have more. You can't be satisfied. You must have more. Do you know that feeling? So there was a very interesting study a long time ago done by Robert Esterlin. It's called the Esterlin Paradox. The Esterlin Paradox, 1972, Robert Esterlin did a study of what makes people happy. And this is called happiness economics. And it had this juxtaposition of three observations. It said, within a society, number one, rich people tend to be happier than poor people. Number two, but rich societies do not tend to be happier than poor societies. So now we have two different factors here. One is, within a society, the people at the top of the hill are happier than the people at the bottom of the hill. But if everybody lived on top of the mountain, they're not happier than a group of people who live at the bottom of the mountain. So the rich societies are not happier than the poorer societies, because it's within that counts. And number three, as companies get richer, they do not get happier. As countries get richer, they do not get happier. Now, why it counts? Esterlin offered an appealing resolution to the paradox, arguing that only relative income matters to happiness. It's only your greed is based on your achieving something more than the next guy. More than the next guy. The other day I was watching a nature program on insects, and I was watching how insects want to have the very best male, the very best female. You have to achieve it over the others. If there were no competition, would there be as much of a drive? I was watching, I think it was flies, battling each other for the attention of another fly. If you didn't have competition, would it be impossible to have greed? You know, think about it. If you sat alone and you had nobody to compete with, how many things would you accumulate? Very interesting question, don't you think? 212-20. Well, we're going to get to our phone calls in a couple of minutes. Let me finish this first. So rich people are happier than poor people. Richer countries are happier than poorer countries. That's a belief. And all countries get richer, they tend to get happier. That's not true. None of that is true. The new finding was, according to the Estelin hypothesis, the paradox. People only feel happier when they are comparing their happiness to someone else's, when you've achieved more than the next guy. Greed often involves using wealth to gain power over others, sometimes by denying others their own wealth or power. But what are the things? Think about greed and what it does for you. If you are greedy and you accomplish things, you buy time. You now don't have to wait online. You don't have to go to the discount market. You could order things by phone. You know, you could do, money buys you time. And in this world, people who have excess time that they use, that they enjoy, time they enjoy, they seem to have more power. The wealthier seem to have time for lunch, you know, casual time. Greed is the far end of the desire. When one desires things simply for their own sake of owning them, such as the desire to have great amounts of money, not to purchase objects, but where the possession of money is an end into itself, greed typically entails acquiring material possessions at the expense of other people's welfare. For example, a father buying himself a new car rather than fixing the roof on a family house, or otherwise a case of morally wrong priorities. People who choose things for themselves rather than taking care of what other people need. Greed for the consumption of food or drink or pleasure combined with excessive indulgence is called gluttony. So when you have greed combined with indulgence, it's called gluttony. Now, the Buddhists believe that greed is based on incorrectly connecting material wealth with happiness. It's caused by a view that exaggerates the power aspects of the object. That is, acquiring material objects has less impact than we imagine. But here's your thing. Is it about acquiring? Is it the act of acquiring? If you think about greed, it's the yearning. Think about feelings that you've had for somebody you've been in love with. You want to be with them. You can't spend enough time away from them. You feel greedy. You want them. You want them. You want them. Is that as important as having them? What happens after you're laying in bed with each other spent? Is it as hot as the time you were desiring them? Yearning. Yearning. We have learned recently about the chemistry of women as opposed to men, that women find sexual stimulation more from yearning than they do from the actual act of sex itself. It's the buildup. It's the desire. It's the leading to. Men, they get more sexual desire from the actual act itself. See? But yearning leads to. Yearning leads to wanting. Yearning leads to desire. Yearning and greed go together. Now, 212-209-2900, we're going to be taking your calls in just a couple of minutes. So the question we have is, well, it kind of comes from neuroeconomics. We look at the chemistry of it, and we find that if your greed has a certain chemistry to it, there's a certain chemistry of that driven, cortisol-driven, dopaminic, nucleus accumbens activation, you know, of the amygdala. We're looking, we have fire, we are looking. Greed has a certain feeling to it, you could feel it. And that feeling chemically is good. That feels great. The frustration of it is not good. Achieving leaves you with a different feeling. You get serotonin. You get endorphins. You get things like that. Those are nice, but they're pleasant. But greed is the hunt. And the hunt seems to be an important part of many humans. Sometimes I think angry people are very greedy. I think greed becomes a replacement. I think the hunt and the desire to achieve and accomplish and beat everybody out is a form of expressing your anger, to saying, I'll get even with all of you. I don't care what the consequences are. I'll win. And in that movie Wall Street, I think it was called, where he talked about greed is good, it's all he talked about was winning, beating the others. When you're angry and you have no way to express your anger, sometimes, especially if you're a nerdy type, sometimes you decide, I'll win with my brain. I'll beat you. I'll beat you at your game. Lawyers, you know, I'm going to now sue you. I'll win that way. I'll win in court. It's all because you don't believe you could compete directly. So you fight using weapons of any kind, and sometimes the weapons are the weapons of the mind. I'll outthink you. Because I'm afraid you'd outpower me. Now, I'm arguing from generality. Of course, the millions of people, fortunately, do not align with this cultural illness of greed. But I think we all experience it on some level. And I'd like to know your experience of it, 212-209-2900. We're going to start taking your calls in just a minute. The pervasive message in our culture is that you'll be happier after you make your next purchase, right? You'll be more attractive, sexier, smarter. Life will be better if you go out and spend. Greed and rampant materialism are the drugs. They conspire to deprive us of balance and joyful lives. They have us distort our lives, neglect our relationships, impoverish our souls. The dysfunction is as real as any destructive or any other disorder. It contains elements of obsessive-compulsive disorder, because when you're greedy, you know what obsessive-compulsive is like. Because you're driven, you know, you have that driven feeling. And at the core, it renders the individuals who are greedy incapable of leading a fruitful life. Because they're driven by something, this need to have more. 212-209-2900. Let's take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Armand. This is Frank calling from Greenwich.
Hello, Frank.
How you doing?
Good. Greenwich of all places.
Well, I'm listening to your show, and it's interesting because I'm an industrial designer, and I work in a world with a lot of designing automobiles and exotic things, and so I have a lot of very wealthy, wealthy clients that own these exotic machines. And the experience I have, which is so interesting on your subject, is that the ones that have all the money and acquire, and they try to find fulfillment from acquiring the biggest collection or the most rare vehicles, they always seem to be the guys that are most unhappy all the time.
Uh-huh.
And the guys that don't have a lot of money but take a long time to acquire a small project, they hang around the shop and they really get into the process of taking something old and carefully, you know, systematically bringing it back to some...
Give me an example of that. Tell me about a guy who you know who was not greedy but took something old and carefully brought it back.
Well, this is amazing. The wealthiest man I've ever worked for was a billionaire. And he owned a million-dollar car that we showed at Pebble Beach in California, which is a very exotic thing. And as we were showing his car there, he had me take a picture of he and his wife in front of it. And I said, well, I'll just send this picture to your house. He goes, well, send me an invoice for that picture because, you know, you have a nice camera. I go, oh, come on, you've been a client for a whole year and paid all your bills. This is a favor. And he goes, no, send me an invoice. Well, I told his wife that I was going to send it to his house. She goes, oh, please don't do that without an invoice. He'll feel like he took advantage of you. And I went to him. I said, you know, your wife told me that you would actually be upset if I did send this without an invoice. I go, you know, I come from a very affluent community, and said, and that kind of thinking and behavior is so rare. I go, what is it? I said, where did you learn that? Because I know he came from huge wealth in his family. He goes, well, basically, he goes, my life is I'm a man in a room with paper, and the paper is money. He goes, I'm not a cook. I can't feed myself. I can't grow plants. I don't know how to build, work on a car. And he goes, I'm just fortunate enough to have the paper to buy the talents of people like you and those around me to make my life very rewarding. And I nearly fainted. I said, you should go on tour. And I wish he would talk to you, but he's a very private person. He so has a grip on his extreme wealth and privilege, and he's the only megazillionaire, and I know a few of them, that is perfectly happy, and he appreciates every little thing. And I just, I always carry that in my heart whenever I work for very greedy, empty, unhappy people. And I tell them that story, like, maybe you ought to learn something from what this guy said.
Right, and, or maybe even learn how to do a little himself. Do you ever know anybody who started from zero? The people who hang around, or maybe it's you. Did you ever hang around and do a project yourself? Did you ever?
Yes, I do it for myself because I love the process.
Tell me, give me an example of a thing that you did for yourself.
Okay, I'm starting a new one right now. I restore antique BMW motorcycles, and I bought one at an auction last week, and I drove down and had dinner with some friends to pick it up, so that was a nice afternoon with friends. Gave me an excuse to go visit them. And this week I'm starting to take it apart piece by piece in my garage, and by next week, what was an old motorcycle all beat up will be pieces, and then each individual piece will get handled and restored, and it may be a year or two from now, and people always are anxious to see me finish, and I say it's not about finishing. It's about, you know, caring enough to do what you do and enjoying the time you're doing and enjoying what you're doing and caring about what you're doing. I said that's all it's about for me, whether it just happened I love old motorcycles. But I'm sure there. I also work on antique houses, and I'm the same way with them. It's, you know, just, you know, if you really are spending your day doing something you enjoy doing and you care about it, and if God, you get to see the results of your work.
Frank, are you the same way with your family?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
I come from my family. Armand, I've talked to you about my family in the past, and I'm telling you, I've had to find a better world for myself. And you guys have been very helpful. I enjoy listening to your show. I've had to find my new family through friends, and it's a very sad experience. I wouldn't say you ever get over it, but to dismiss your family because it's too dysfunctional and holding you back is like the hardest battle I've ever battled.
A hard battle for you, a man who believes that he could repair just about anything from the ground up.
You got it.
You've had to give up. Now, is it just people that you find so impossible? And maybe it's not it's the people that are difficult, as opposed to the machinery, which is easy.
Yes, that is another component of it. Though I do work with people on a lot of levels, and I find it exhausting dealing with the emotions and the immaturity and the angry problems in projects that I work on. And my great relief is to just go into my world where I can control this and enjoy this time without interruption or controversy is a big, and all my friends that do it, we all call it our therapy.
Sure, because the carburetor is not going to get angry at you.
Yeah, you know, and if it does something that gets you angry, it wasn't intentional or malicious, and you know it. You mm-hmm. get PO'd, but you just move on. It's just, that was a problem, solve it, you know, but it doesn't have emotional baggage, so it is really good therapy for guys it is.
It's a way, for you it is, because you have kind of problems with people.
Oh, people, yeah.
Up close, and especially women who get angry. Women who get angry. I could just hear it.
Oh, I lost everything because of an angry girlfriend when I was 20 years old. I lost everything, and I mean from a career, in the toilet, in jail, you name it, and I was only 20, 21 years old, and that stigma and some other things after that has, you know, it's formed me, and I recognize it, but I think I'm hoping I found a healthy balance for my issues and my fears and, you know, trying to make the most of it, I guess.
Just stay away from women and hang on with bicycles.
No, they're, I love women, that's the problem.
I know, I hear it, you love them and you're afraid of them.
Yeah,
and they have power over you because they get angry and you don't know what to do when they get angry because you don't understand their emotions.
I've been saved. My high school sweetheart is my first love, and we have been the closest friends since we started dating at 15. And it's funny, throughout our whole lives, no matter what other relationships we've gone through, we tell each other how much we love each other and that everybody else is just a temporary fixture, that we're here for each other now and at the end. So even ex-husbands and wives have had to accept this relationship, friendship, ex-romance, and it's quite unique, and I think it's quite healing because it's always you always know who you got there.
Well, tell me, does she get angry or does she accept you completely?
Accepts me completely.
That's
and I
it.
Accept her completely.
That's what
we
you
know
needed.
Each other. We grew up together and helped each other through the difficult times, and no one knows each other better than we know each other, and we love each other for it, too. We know it's unbreakable.
Does she ride a motorcycle?
No. In fact, she gets very upset with me.
I thought. So tell me about that. What does she get upset about?
She just gets nervous that I'm 58 years old, so she gets nervous. And I keep telling her, I said, you know, the most dangerous thing I really do is I go for a morning health walk in a very affected, affluent community where I almost get run down flat dead in crosswalks every morning. I have to jump out of the way of these affected, on the cell phone, out of their mind drivers. I go, I'm probably going to get run over doing my health walk before I get hurt on my motorcycle. And she says, you're probably right about that. I said, yeah, it's a pathetic fact. I think my chances are slimmer of coming home after my health walk than going out on a ride on a Sunday morning.
Frank, I want to thank you very much for calling in. Thank you. Thank you.
Well,
my
thank
best
you,
to
Armand.
You, and congratulations on what you've gotten for yourself. Did you ever repair an Indian, by the way?
If you know anybody who has an old Indian, I have a friend here in Glenville, Connecticut, who's an Indian restoration specialist, and he's a great guy. And he's like me. He's does it because he loves it.
Yeah, it's quite a special. It's quite a machine.
Yeah.
Great.
Beautiful machine.
Thank you very much for calling in.
Okay, Armand. Have a good day.
Thank you. So, what do you think is the most dangerous animal out there today? What animal do you think is more responsible for human death? And I'll give you a list. You think it's snakes, sharks, deer, alligator, bears? Which do you think cause more deaths? The answer, my friends, are deers. Yep. Deer accidents with drivers, of course, they don't attack anybody, but deer accidents account for 17,000 deaths in the United States every year. And so much more, seven times more than bears, snakes, alligators, and all the other guys. How do you like them apples? It's all how you look at it. Was that 1,700, Stephanie? 1,700, sorry. Stephanie here, always keeping us sober. This is Armand DeMille with you. It's Positive Mind. We're talking about greed, and we're talking about your greed. We've spoken to Frank, but I want to speak to you. Neuroeconomics is teaching us about it. They say that greed includes surprise, anticipation, fear, all aspects that in some way feed us and make us feel good. Our brain is looking to get aroused, and it gets more aroused by anticipation of achievement than by getting the actual achievement itself. So when we get back, we'll talk a little more about this, and we will, what will we do? And then we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you with a Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. We'll be moving into Marathon Week very shortly, where we'll be asking you to make donations to the station. Please be sure at that time, give us whatever you can, because we love to keep going, and we need to keep people like Frank repairing his machines. We'll be back with you. Thank you. Just sweet. From Balcony Rock. Balcony Rock from the album Jazz Goes to College, one of the first jazz albums I ever heard when I was a kid. Couldn't believe it. You know, jazz musicians, they're kind of interesting, talk about greed. No greed. Greed isn't there. It's all about, I'm striving, I get to a certain level. But it's all right. There's no frustration behind it. That's what I love about jazz. Jazz, the beauty of jazz was let's get together. It was about family. You see, greed is based on the hypotenuse. Just kidding. The hypothesis that I'm going to get more than you. Life on Discovery Channel. Life is a series of programs about animals, plants, insects, and fish. Things under the sea. And what it's showing over and over again is that every animal competes to get the best, the top of the heap. And they're all competing to get the top of the heap. Some accept that they're a class B monkey, you know what I mean? They're not the alpha. But it's about competition. Which of the class B monkeys are you going to be the best one? Which one are you going to select? And it seems to be all about sex. If you look at nature, everything is about sex. Plants want to have sex. Men want to have sex. Male plants want to have sex with girl plants. And the girl plants want to have sex and they want to have babies. So insects, plants, everything, even the succotash, just wants to have sex. And it wants to have sex so that it could do what nature says it should do, which is replicate, reproduce, and keep the species going. But greed doesn't sound like that, you know? Greed sounds like I need more than I need. I need to wipe you out because you're a potential danger. So I am going to get more and more. So you think about Goldman Sachs in the news, and you think about a company that says, we see a crash coming in the homeowner's realty market. And some smart guys out there, Paulson, he knew it. He said, this market is going to crash. While people are buying homes, he said, you know, exuberance, unnatural exuberance, too much. And he knew it. And what he did was they sold you more mortgages, knowing the mortgage market was going to crash, and they bet against the market, and they helped drive it down south. That's part of the greed. Part of the greed is I'm going to step over your dead body because it'll be a softer pasture to walk on. You know, all right, it's nice. Nice that you died. I don't have to wear my shoes when I walk. You know, greed. But that makes it all wrong. But every one of you know the feeling of greed. Every one of you know what it's like because you've all felt it. You've all been in it. And I'm not going to judge you because I know how easy it is. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille on the air with you with The Positive Mind. Hi there.
Hello.
Hello.
I've had some greedy parts in my life.
Which part of you is greedy?
Well, a number of years ago, I guess it was, I succumbed to the sexual greed.
Uh-huh.
And, while I was married, I fell for, I got involved in an affair.
Uh-huh.
And I just wanted more and more and more of it, and so...
Was it, you wanted more and more and more of this one person you were seeing?
Yeah.
You hungered for him.
Of that particular sexual satisfaction.
Yeah, that one, you couldn't stop yourself.
Yeah.
Now, you want to hear a funny thing? Listen to this.
Yes.
One day, we had a person who had a manic depressive illness, a bipolar illness, and she, who had a very limited sexuality, went to a physician. And the physician gave her a chemical to control her bipolarity. And the chemical made her crave sexually. It unleashed a kind of sexual greed. And when I talked to him about it, he said, oh, yeah, that happens with that drug. He said, you know, the woman went from being manic depressive, one kind of, you know, unhappiness, to this compulsion. So it kind of almost points to the fact that maybe that was chemical inside you. Maybe there was a chemical shift that took place that drove you from one place to the other.
Oh, I don't know. I think it was just that I was totally accepted by this other person, whereas I was criticized a lot by my husband.
Uh-huh. And so, well, okay, so total acceptance. When you feel total acceptance, what happens to you? I bet you weren't totally accepted by your father. I bet you weren't.
It was one of those parent-child situations where that was not an issue, really. You know, my father was working, my mother was taking care of the children, and I didn't expect anything from my father.
Of course, but let me take a step. What's your name, by the way?
Rita.
Rita. So, Rita, yes, of course you didn't expect anything from him. But you are set up for having a relationship with a man where you don't expect anything. So you get a husband, and you don't expect this total acceptance because you never got it from your dad. Then a man comes along who gives it to you.
Mm-hmm.
And it activates all of the early childhood yearnings that you had as a child that you never even recognized because you didn't expect anything.
Mm-hmm.
So it unleashes this insatiable desire on your part. I gotta be with him. I gotta have him. I gotta merge with him.
Uh-huh.
Sure. How long did that last?
While my husband was away, it lasted a couple of months, and then we separated. and then we got divorced, and I stayed with the other man for 10 or 12 years.
And or what? And what happened after those 12 years?
Well, we started going our separate ways because I guess during the time that I was with my husband, I was encouraged to be my own person. So when I was with the second man, I still was working on being my own person and seeking creative outlets, and this started driving a bit of a wedge between us.
So the man who was totally accepting of you,
yes,
was not as accepting once you were his main lady, right?
Because,
once
you
were
because,
there, because he wanted, he said, slow down and just be here, and you're saying, no, I got a yearning.
Yeah, I need to, take graduate courses or go traveling and go to other countries, and that caused separation. He was feeling resentful, I guess.
Sure. So what you're saying to me, Rita, is that yearning really turns you on. Needing to develop turns you on.
Yes.
Having is not as big a turn on.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, good. And how are things going nowadays?
Sorry, what?
How are things going nowadays for you?
Nowadays, I'm in my third phase where I'm totally on my own, and I'm developing my garden, you know, my backyard, my garden. And I have a lot of personal friends, and I'm devoting myself to my family. I just spent 2 weeks with my mother, which was very interesting.
Well, let me ask you what you're growing in your garden.
I'm just kind of making it into from a flat clay-filled, sparsely covered with grass, to an English garden.
An English garden. So you're really in there filling it up. You're putting in a lot of soil.
Yeah.
Do you want as many flowers as you could get?
Well, no, it has to. Well, there's a lot of shade there, so I have to put a combination of, you know, whatever can grow there. And I've been doing all the work myself. And it's so very satisfying.
But it's never finished. You never finish it, do you?
Well, it's been 5 years. I hope I get finished.
Do you think eventually you'll finish? Your garden will be perfect?
Well, I don't know. I hope. Yeah, well, I think even...
Well, here's my question.
Yes,
do you hope that one day your garden will be completed?
I do, because I want to go on to something else.
That's exactly my point. There you are again. You want to go on to something else.
Yes, yes.
Right? The garden's only as good as you can keep fixing it.
Yeah, but you know, it requires a lot of hard work, and I'm getting older. Arthritis is setting in. Yes, and so
Rita,
you know,
you've got a great spirit. A great spirit.
I have to tell you that I'm also great friends with my husband, my first actual husband, and my second man. So I think I do. I think I do.
So why are you not friends with your mother?
I am friends with my mother. It's just that it's very difficult.
Yeah, what's the difficulty?
Well, she's 95. I am friends with her, but then she gets up and she's teary-eyed and she imagines she's losing her mind, and then I have to help her find something, and so I help her find it, and I get over it, and I hug her, and I realize that this happens to everybody. It's not my fault. It's not her fault, and I try to comfort her, and then she gets over it, but it will happen again and again and again.
Oh, it kills you. I hear it. It rips in your heart.
Yes, but my sister also is there, my sister who lives nearby, so we share this wonderful responsibility.
Rita, you sound like a very beautiful person. I want to thank you for all that you give in this world.
Oh, and I thank you, too, and I can come to see you because I paid for you about 4 years ago.
Well, get it to see me right away because I'm running out of time.
Okay.
Call my office. Go ahead.
Okay, I will.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. Bye.
Hi, 212-209-2900. This is a good time, my friends, right before the fund drive, which will be coming up, which occupies a lot of time. If you have bought or if you have donated money to the station and gotten in exchange one of those consultations with me, now's a good time to do it. Give my office a call, and we'll get to see you. And, of course, it's of no charge. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Candace from Jersey City.
Hello, Candace.
I wanted to comment on something that you said about people only being happy in relation to other people. You know, so if we're looking up, then we're unhappy, and if we're looking down, then we kind of feel good about what we've got. And in Islam, the Prophet Muhammad taught us a way to be happy and to overcome greed and to try to make life, you know, better for yourself and better for the people around you. Basically, what he said was that in worldly matters, you should look to those who have less than you so that you become grateful and generous, because looking at those who have more wealth or, you know, more acquirements and so forth, it'll only make you feel like we need to have more or as much, and it kind of minimizes the perception of our blessings. And in spiritual matters, we should look to those, we should strive to be like those who we perceive to have a stronger spiritual connection, because by looking at people who have less of a spiritual connection, it kind of makes us feel like, well, you know, at least I'm not doing that, at least I'm not a thief, or at least I'm not a this, or at least I'm not a that. And so we don't strive to make ourselves better people in terms of our character. And so the point is to, you know, be grateful for what you've been blessed with and to bless other people by your good character and by your generosity.
Where, Candace, do you run into temptation to become greedy?
Food.
Food. It's very hard around food, right? Because food should be kind of simple.
Well, yeah, I like to cook and I like to eat.
And what do you like to eat the most? What is the thing that is just, if it's in your refrigerator, it's not going to last the night?
Carrot cake.
Carrot cake.
Yeah.
That's what they should have warned about in a lot of these books. They should have warned about beware the carrot cake. Do you make the carrot cake?
Yeah, I don't like us. The only carrot cake I like is the one that I make myself.
And I'll bet you make it not as sweet as the other carrot cakes.
I use more spice. I use more cinnamon, allspice, and stuff like that. Nutmeg, but not as much sugar.
And you can't stay away from it.
That's why I don't make it very frequently.
You're going to have to make one and send it to us. I'll bring it down to WBAI, and we'll have it during the fun drive. I'll put it down for the volunteers.
Oh, great.
Would you make one for them?
I would. I would love to do that.
Good. Well, you call WBAI, call the station. Say, I've made a carrot cake for the volunteers during the fun drive, which, in fact, do it during one of my programs when I'm on the air, and we'll celebrate you.
Wonderful.
And it'll change the nature of the carrot cake. What?
Yes, it'll be a charity rather than an indulgence.
That's exactly right. You got the point. Thank you so much for calling in, Candace, and thanks for the lessons.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
212-209-2900. There is something about looking down. I remember a man, a very greedy man. He didn't give a darn about anybody. But every Christmas, he would go buy bocce chocolates. Now, these are these little chocolates you get that usually get by the... They're wrapped in silver, and they have a nut on the inside. And it's a good piece of chocolate, but it's usually, like, expensive, or 15 cents or 25 cents for one piece. And every Christmas, he would tell stories about how many people he met who were homeless, who he gave a piece of chocolate to. And he said, and they looked at me with these starry eyes about how wonderful it was that I gave them chocolates instead of a couple of dollars. And he felt so powerful. And it used to make me just a little sick, you know, to think, this is how you float your boat. This is it, giving chocolates to homeless people. But being the accepting man that I am, and being the kind of guy I could say to myself, his life must feel very empty, because he has to find power by stepping on the bodies of other people. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hi there, you're Armand DeMille, yes.
Hi. We share a name. My name is Armand also.
Hey, Armand also. You have that nice name of also. Hey, Armand, isn't it a nice name?
Yeah.
Did you always have it? I mean, did you have it since you were a baby?
Yes. Actually given to me by an aunt that passed away, unfortunately, but...
You know, it's a really, I don't meet many Armands. And the Mexicans have an expression called tocayo that means that when you meet somebody by the same name, you're related in some way. So here I am talking to a brother, see? And the niceness about having that name and going through life. On the Lower East Side of Manhattan, when I was a kid in the slums, it was a tough name because people made fun of me.
Yes.
You too?
I've had a couple people, you know, take it and twist it into other things. So.
Like Almond Joy.
Exactly. Yes.
Exactly,
I've gotten that one, yes.
And I'd say, see, it shows I'm nuts. That's what I would say in response. Funny us. So, I mean, tell me, Armand, tell me about your life.
Well, I had actually a statement to make about, or to, you know, call attention to something that you said earlier, which was, all right, if a man needs to fix the roof of his house and instead decides to buy a car and he's not taking care of responsibility, or another form of greed. But I'm looking at that, and, like, for instance, I'm a person that I work check to check. I do have a family that I support, and you know, sometimes I feel like, okay, well, if I don't take this time out to maybe take a little bit of my hard-earned money and get something for myself and have this little piece of, you know, achieve something that's going to make me happy here on the side, like one of my hobbies, is that necessarily a greed, you know?
Well, of course, that's a different thing, Armand, because what you're talking about is kind of sharing the pie a little bit. You live for other people, and you're saying every now and then, you know, I'm giving my food out to everybody. I make sandwiches all day long. Is it right if I take a bite myself? You know, that's what you're saying. That's a whole different thing than the guy who says, my family has a house, and it's raining on them, and the hell with them, I'm going to buy a car anyway. Okay. That's a whole different story. Oh, well, life must be really tough for you, living check to check.
Oh, I mean, well, it's not completely tough because I do have help. You know, I do live with my mother and my whole family. We all live together to pay for, you know, the house and, mm-hmm. and keep over our heads. But, I mean, it's not completely tough, but at the same time, being check to check and always worrying about if I'm going to have the job the next day, if, you know, you never know.
You know, Armand, and it's always like, it's like not only don't you know, but it's also like life is always a burden. It's like you wake up in the morning and it's a job. And it's like you must be tired of it.
Yeah, and then to top it off, I work every day in an area with some people that are ridiculously wealthy. So, I mean, it's almost like a rub in the face, you know, every day.
And you look at it and you wonder, what is it? Are you born this way? How come you can't have what they have? What feeling do you get when you see that?
Well, I mean, to tell you the truth, I'll tell you honestly, it's not that I want what they have. I would like the peace of mind that having not to worry about my bills would give.
Right, of course.
You know what I mean?
Of course.
That's what I envy more than the material possessions of everything. I mean, you know, the nice houses and all the land and all the cars, that's real nice and everything, but I just would like the peace of mind, and I'm not worrying from day to day whether or not I'm going to be able to do everything.
Absolutely understand.
So,
you know, I understand, Armand, and I wish for you that it gets easier for you. But no, I would not call your desire to give yourself a little morsel of something special greed. I'd say you're a beautiful guy who's waiting for his thing to happen.
Thank you.
And keep up that good name, will you?
Definitely.
Armand, thank you very much for calling.
This is
Armand DeMille talking to Armand. We're going to have to be going soon. And so we'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. Tomorrow I'm going to be talking about why we're so attracted to violence. Why do we like to see it? Why do we like to smell it? Why? What is it about people that wants to see violence? Whereas I know a lot of other people, they just can't stand it. They don't want to see any form of violence, not even in nature. So, if you want a copy of today's program, you can go to thepositivemind.com and you can listen to it again. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1. Thank you.
Armand DeMille with the Positive Mind. He'll be back tomorrow at 1 o'clock. You're tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 90.5.